Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, this is Miles Shannon, and I'm also known as Cassowary.
Inglewood, L.A. saxophone. Mm-hmm. See, we're done.
Yeah,
we've covered it all. There's nothing more to say.
Well, kind of going off what you said about being a quote-unquote new artist, one question that, you know, I wish people would ask more, and it's information that I wish I had, was that, you know, how do you get people to listen to your music? You know, it doesn't really matter how good the content is. It's more about exposure and, you know, kind of getting people to actually take a chance and listen to it. Because that's oftentimes the hardest part, is, you know, convincing people that's worth the time. And I've had a lot of success with that, which is nice, you know, just getting people to actually want to hear it. So I would say, yeah, that's like the biggest part. Not so much like the quality of music, even. It's more so just like getting some ears on it. So I was named after Miles Davis by my mother. My grandfather had jazz records all around the house.
Right.
He actually passed before I was born, but you know, as I was growing up, I would, you know, eventually discover these records. And
yeah, you basically inherited the collection, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up listening to a lot of Miles, a lot of Clifford Brown. And so I kind of always wanted to like follow that. You know, I thought I was kind of named Miles for a reason. So even as a kid, I was like, I'm going to play some jazz. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be exposed to it early on.
So did you grow up? Did you live in Koreatown and then hang in Inglewood, or?
My mom was born and raised in Inglewood, so I had a lot of time spent there, a lot of roots there. My childhood was definitely spent in Koreatown for the most part. Just like L.A. in general, just kind of
Koreatown wasn't the hipster mecca.
That it is now.
There was no Line Hotel.
No. It was definitely like pretty sketchy.
L.A. County School for the Arts, High School for the Arts. So take me through kind of the, you know, because there's obviously you've gotten a lot of pedigree here, and there's been,
for sure,
you know, and I'll just go further down and mix this up. So let's start with the high school, but then we'll get into your teacher and.
Well, before I went to Loxa, I was still pursuing jazz, definitely more, you know, casually. That being said, my mom was very supportive with the music stuff, which I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
So I was doing, like, you know, music intensives here and there. I was spending a lot of time at Stanford because they have a great music program there during the summer.
Stanford in Palo Alto.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did some stuff, you know, I did some stuff through Juilliard and got a lot of information through that. And this is all stuff when I was like, you know, 14, 15.
Right.
So that was really cool to be able to get around those places. That Loxa, though, however, definitely opened up, you know, a lot of stuff for me. I mean, just one, yes, my instructors were amazing. Walter Smith III is amazing.
There it is, right there. Yep. So tell me, for those of us that don't know, and I don't, Walter Smith III,
yeah,
pedigree, so, what's the scoop?
He's just kind of, you know, one of the, I mean, it's funny, jazz has kind of taken this new direction recently where it's very, you know, involved with hip hop to the point even where it's like kind of hard to escape. I don't think that's a bad thing. But Walter, what was cool about him is he really has this foot that's still in, you know, tradition in the past.
He's old school. Old school.
He's definitely an old school cat. He still goes, he plays gigs in like suits and shit. Like he's very like, you know, I was really into that shit in high school. And just his, you know, he has so much knowledge with just harmonic like information, and just the way he treats, you know, improvising and stuff. It was all stuff that I was very lucky to learn.
So you were pretty young and you were going pretty deep.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
like really
sure.
Deep, really yeah. Young.
And that was another cool thing with Lox is that we were all so competitive, all the kids there. So it was like very,
this
much,
is like the fame school.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to describe it. But yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of like, you know, it's weird. Before I went to Loxa, the coolest sax player to listen to was Michael Brecker.
Sure.
And then I get to Loxa and they're like, oh, you're listening to Michael Brecker?
Yeah, because Michael Brecker was commercial.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Michael, what?
The Brecker brothers had a hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Some sneaking funk, up behind or, you. Or,
maybe. Yeah,
they had a hit.
Yeah, so I didn't realize that it was like, you know, kind of commercial, like that vibe. It was more like, oh, are you listening to Warren Marsh? Are you listening to, like, you know, Gary Thomas? Just like very obscure stuff. And, you know, it really challenged me to actually, like,
To learn stuff
and to really find, you know, unique sounds, essentially.
I know that you moved to New York.
Yeah.
But I call it, I kind of put it down as pursuing the Blue Note dream.
Yeah, exactly. Which was right? Definitely perpetuated in Loxa as well. I mean, we were surrounded by a lot of Blue Note people.
Right.
Ambrose Akinmuziri.
But that Blue Note dream, was it, you know, a nightmare?
Oh, yeah. A lot of it was money. Yes. I did want to go pretty badly to music school after Loxa. But it was more, you know, I was asking myself, do I need to? Does it make sense to do this, you know, with the career that I'm pursuing? I definitely attribute my taste now in songwriting to the fact that I didn't go, because I was definitely more of a purist back in 2012 when I graduated high school. And I was only listening to jazz and I was only playing standards and like trying to write stuff that, you know, sounded like that.
Where did Earl Sweatshirt come into the mix?
I grew up with Tebe. I mean, I went to elementary school with him. So we, you know, we got close when we were like 5 years old and then kind of just have always been like family.
And again, the way it's written is that you spent a lot of time listening to rap.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, he had a pretty incredible taste in hip hop and just in poetry in general. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, how he was raised. But yeah, we were watching stuff that was like, and listening to stuff that like we probably should not have been, you know, at a very young age, like Mobb Deep and, you know, like we were listening to like Richard Pryor and watching Monty Python. And I was like,
getting your brain just absolutely destroyed.
Oh yeah.
Back to New York.
Yeah.
How long did you pay your dues and realize it wasn't paying?
Oh man, honestly, not very long. And,
Did you live in Brooklyn? Did you do the whole?
So I was staying with a girl I was seeing at the time, which was, you know, convenient.
Yes.
And then that actually fizzled out and I ended up staying with some friends who were kind enough to have me stay there. I have some family out there. So it was pretty easy for me. That wasn't the tough part. I was fortunate enough to get around that kind of like getting used to New York and like figuring that whole thing out.
You right. know
what I mean?
But what was the moment? Cause it's like, oh man, you're in New York. Come on. This is where it happens.
Yeah. I think it was when I was at Smalls, and it was kind of like a jam, you know, and that was kind of what I thought I was supposed to do at the time is just go to these jazz clubs and like hop on the bandstand and, you know, kind of battle it out with these other sax players. Like it's like six sax players on stage and they all want to solo like Coltrane for like 10 minutes and they will. So it's like, you know, you're sitting there and then we've been playing on Green Dolphin Street for like 40 minutes. You know what I mean? And it's just like,
and you're like, I don't want to do this.
Right. And at what point is it like musical, you know what I mean? And when is it not?
Versus clinical and who can be the closest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
Who can imitate?
That was weird for me. And it was it's very competitive, which I like, you know, and I was used to, but I was also getting tired of it. I just did.
You come back here and, you know, you have to get New York out of your system.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, where was the moment that you kind of knew what we're here to talk about existed?
I would say it was with acoustic guitar. Because that's something that, you know, and now I only know this now after writing with guitar a lot. And it's so convenient and it makes sense to write music on guitar. And I think that's why everyone does it. I think that's why everyone's been doing it. I didn't know this. You know, I was only writing on like either bass or on piano because that's what I was taught at Lux. I wouldn't even write songs on saxophone because I was told,
don't do it.
Yeah, don't do that.
Right.
So when I started writing with guitar, that was when my whole idea of songwriting, it went from composing to songwriting. That's, I think there's two different, very different things. So yeah, that was that transition, definitely. And also writing lyrics. You know, I started writing lyrics with no intention of singing them because I never had any experience singing. And so, you know, the lyrics really bring music to life in a different way. This is also very different than how I was thinking about music. I mean, I was infinitely inspired by Thundercat. The reason why is because he is, you know, just an incredible bass player and musician. But also he was writing lyrics that I connected to personally, and they were fun. They're fun lyrics. Some of them are deep. And it was just very digestible. And I thought it was a really good vessel for his jazz vocabulary, you know, and that was something I wanted to do. Something I saw a lot when I was playing jazz, even jazz songs that I wrote, people, you know, unless you listen to jazz, like you're hearing it and you're like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. I don't know what this is, you know, and I totally get that. And with Thundercat, that never really was the case. People like, you know, bump that and they're like, oh yeah, it's great. It's great. He's great. And so I wanted to kind of capture that. I wrote these songs. I was writing these songs for like maybe like 6 months. And the reason why was because I had this, after I left New York, I was like, geez, like I need something, you know, I need a project. I need something that gives me purpose because I didn't have an album out yet. I was like, you know, 22, 23 when I was really like starting to like get these gears going, and I was like, I need an album because that's how you, you know, get out there. That's how you get, you know, listened to. I wasn't even, you know, I wasn't getting as many, you know, studio gigs as I would like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I had some jazz gigs here.
But was
and
somebody
there.
Representing you? Did you have...
No, so not at the time. So this is actually a funny story. I had this album, right? We recorded the whole thing pretty much. We were just mixing it. I go to a bar and I run into this guy. His name's Ben Kane. He's now managing me. We just kind of got along instantly. I told him, he works at WME. And I was like, yeah, I have this album. He checks it out. He's like, dude, this is really good. He's like, this is really, really good. And then after he saw a couple shows that I played, he was like, I'm just going to send this out. He told me, he's like, this usually doesn't work, but I'm just going to send it out to some labels and see if we get any bites. And we got no bites except for Fat Possum. So yeah. And you know, from there, it's kind of been a crazy ride. Because, you know, a lot of me, like, wanted to even just, like, give up on music. That, you know, I almost really considered...
Wow, New York really did bring you down.
I'm telling you, man, it's kind of, it's pretty, you know, disheartening sometimes, you know, that whole energy.
Are you ready for what's to come? And are you aware of what's to come?
Yeah, I am ready, and the reason why is because I've been getting this, you know, such valuable information about, you know, what goes into actually getting your music out there.
But I mean, as you move forward, are you going to bring in other people to play?
Oh, for sure. For sure. The second album, I'm actually really excited about doing. I know we haven't even released the first one, but I'm already looking towards the future.
Of course.
And getting, you know, just musicians that I've always admired.
So that is the Quincy model.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah, I definitely want it to be like a studio album where it's like people are coming in for, you know, a song or...
For,
you know,
parts, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, which is always fun. Always fun getting new sounds. And, you know, Cassowary, the first album, it's very much so, you know, family. Like, it's my drummer, Sean, who I've been playing with for years, my bass player, Aiden, playing together for years. But yes, we're going to definitely want to experiment and like bring people in and, you know, just have new colors, new flavors on the album for sure. each song I write, and you can hear this on the album, each one is pretty much, so there's a sound that I think is very much a Cassowary sound that's present on certain songs. I think She Funked Me has that. But certain songs don't, you know, they're kind of more straight ahead jazz. They're more alternative rock. So each song is a little different. I tend to tell people that the genre is jazz adjacent, but it's not,
wow.
You know, I think it's a good way to describe it.
How are you going to get radio play with that?
I know, right?
Right.
Or I'll go with like world music or alternative or kind of experimental, all right. You know, something that's ambiguous. Because I like to leave it up to interpretation.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Okay.
And what it is two of your songs on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the inside, I play nonstop music.
Mm.